Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca, and my co-host, Michelle Chosudowski, editor of Global Research. Today, my guest is James Fetzer. Jim is the Distinguished Department of Philosophy McKnight University Professor Emeritus at the University of Wisconsin in Duluth. He's also a prolific author of numerous articles and 20 books in the philosophy of science and on the theoretical foundations of computer science, artificial intelligence, and cognitive science. But that's not the topic for today, or they are not the topics for today. Jim is also the founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, and I think everybody understands something about that. It's a nonpartisan association of faculty, students, scholars, dedicated to exposing the official lies, and we sure have a lot of those, removing the shroud of deceit over them and revealing the truths about 9/11, and we slowly find stuff out. It's not very pleasant. So we'll talk about that and whatever other directions Jim wants to go in. Jim, I hope we're connected. Oh, I can barely hear you. You haven't got him yet? Have you called him? Well, let me go on until Jim is on the line. I'll get into the topics that he wishes to address, 9/11 or current things that are going on. We certainly have something I write about. I write about a lot of things all the time. One of my newest articles is on the global economic crisis. Manny, please cut in when Jim is on the line so I'll know, okay? The crisis goes on. There's a G20 meeting that will begin on Wednesday of this week, the 1st of April. And I heard somebody make a comment that they're dubbing it Financial Fool's Day. Well, unfortunately, we're the fools because we're the ones being looted to send trillions of our dollars, trillions with a T as in Tom, trillions of our dollars to criminal bankers. And that's what the Bush administration began doing. That's what the Obama administration is doing. It's the reason I like to think of the nexus between Washington and Wall Street as a crime syndicate. We need to take a break. Hopefully my guest will be on as soon as we come back. Let's do that and we'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, having a problem connecting with my guest this morning, Jim Fetzer. So I'll carry on best I can. Let me also suggest that until we get connected with him, if anyone wants to call in and raise a point, ask a question, then please do it. Be delighted to do it. Ordinarily, I defer from call-ins because no matter how much time I have, a full hour minus breaks, it's never enough to cover everything that needs to be talked about. So I like to give it all to my guests. That's the reason I prefer not to take call-ins. But if I have a problem like now, then I'd be happy to have anybody call in if they'd like to. I started talking a little bit on the global economic crisis. It is very dire, and regular listeners to this program understand that very well. One guest after another, and we'll be on this full time tomorrow. Economist Rick Wolf will be my guest tomorrow. He's been on before, and we'll talk about what's going on in the dire situation. And he goes into the roots of what happened and how we've descended from a much sturdier, higher level in years past to where we are now. But very sadly, the Obama administration is just compounding not just the bad policies of the Bush administration, but their criminal policies. We're talking about mass theft, the continuation of the greatest ever wealth transfer in history. Didn't begin with George Bush, it began long before him, but it began years ago, certainly after the 1970s. Oh, you could think of the roots of it going back to that point and then growing, beginning with the Reagan era. So think of a few decades of transferring wealth from the great masses of people to the top elite in the country, the top 1% or so, and another small percentage benefits to a small extent. But it's really that top 1% that gets the lion's share of the benefits. And that's been going on really in high gear since the economic crisis broke in 2007. So I'm thinking it went back to that time period. It really began before that, but it erupted much more publicly a little bit, crept out from under the surface from its hiding places then. And more people began to realize that we have a problem. Nobody realized how serious it would be. I fully expected a big trouble to erupt at some time or other, but it caught me by surprise. I honestly believed they would spring that surprise on a new president and let George Bush get off with no further black marks on his record. My goodness, he has an unmatched record of black marks among all U.S. presidents. So then you add this on top of all the others. And I wrote a very, very long article at the end of last year assessing his legacy over 8 years, including the beginnings of this terrible economic calamity that we're going through now that seems to get worse the more weeks and months that pass. And the Obama administration promising change. Well, the only change I see happening is the looting, the foreign wars, the police state tactics, much more coming. It's just picking up, not missing a beat, intensifying in terms of the amount of money that's going from us to the Wall Street crowd, to the big bankers. That absolutely has gotten into high gear. And the last article I wrote about it, I called it Obama's latest No Banker Left Behind scheme, something on the order of $12.5 trillion that we know about has either been handed out or pledged to go to this criminal class. And, of course, these are public tax dollars, our money going to them. The bill will come due incrementally for many, many years to come. And on top of it all, the policies that they're following aren't doing anything to help the economy recover. It's doing exactly the opposite. They are doing exactly the opposite. They are harming the economy worse, creating a greater crisis. And, of course, the fallout is very simple. Anybody losing a job, losing a home, or in danger of either or both knows full well what kind of a calamitous situation we're in. There's no recession going on when you have a job and you have a decent income and you're not worried about losing your home and you only read about it or hear about it on TV or the radio. Then you know something's going on, but if it doesn't touch your life, then it's only something you're aware of, but you don't obsess over it. Ah, you got Jim on the line? Jim?
Yes,
goodness. I was worried I took down your phone number wrong.
Yes. No. I had lost track of time. I apologize.
when this does happen, I had a guest from Venezuela once who came on about 10 minutes late, and she had some kind of a meeting with the Chavez government. And she had to finish up and then race back to wherever her phone was located so I could reach her. And we began about 10. I carried on. We started about 10 minutes late. So I'm used to it. I can keep this thing going if I have to.
I have no doubt. I have had radio shows where I lost my guest at the last minute and I had 2 hours to fill. So I appreciate the situation. I certainly didn't intend to cause this for you.
Oh, well, accidents happen, and certainly nobody would do this intentionally. And someone like you, Jim, who, you have your own program, and you know the drill very, very well. But, of course, you've been a guest on so many programs that you know the drill by that. So anybody who's a professional and acts like one would never let this happen. But, oh, I was going on famously until I got the word that you were connected. I introduced you, explained who you were, mentioned 9/11 truth, and now that we're connected, what should we talk about? 9/11, the current situation,
well,
you name it.
Lenny, 9/11 is such a pressing matter. There is a new forum we're establishing for research on 9/11 that is automatically available to those who are members of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. But others may be admitted at the discretion of the forum moderator, whose name is Michael Morrissey. He's from Germany. He's an excellent person, and he's my new co-chair of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. So let me just mention that if anyone is interested in this, they can write to me directly to join Scholars at jfetzer@d.umn.edu, or they can visit 911scholars.org and click on the forum icon toward the top for more information. I think this is going to be a simply excellent discussion of these issues, Stephen, and actually I'm delighted to be able to announce it here on your program.
Oh, that's wonderful, Jim. You know, I had trouble going to your website and bringing it up. I tried bringing it up, 20 minutes ago at least, and I'm not getting it to come up. Is somebody...
Well, what address were you using, Steve? It was an old address, you see. There was the... what was it?
I went to a couple... one of the ones I'm looking at right now was scholarsfor911truth.org.
You wrote out the whole name? Because it's just... The site is now just 911scholars.org. 911scholars.org.
Scholars.org. Let me see what happened. 911 Scholars.
There's no slash there. It's just 911scholars.org.
I've got you Googled, and so far no response.
No, you can put that right in your URL. You don't have to do a Google on that. That's a regular address, of course.
Well, I Googled it, and I've got 911scholars.org. And I clicked, but so far it's not coming up.
That's pretty strange. I mean, I'm right there just now. I mean, it works all the time. Let's see what happens if I go into Google. Let's see.
It always bothers me when something like this happens, Jim, that the work you're doing is so important that somebody is deliberately throwing sand in the gears.
Well, I find when I go by Google... Stephen, the very first one that shows up is Scholars for 9/11 Truth Home, and if I click on it, then I'm right there where I should be.
So it comes up perfectly fine to you?
It does for me, but you know, I'm very troubled that it doesn't for you.
Well, I must tell you very honestly that once in a while my computer acts very, very sluggishly. So I'm gonna check it out with my Apple rep once the program is over and see if we could do anything to rectify this.
Stephen, try it once more. What have you got in your Google slot? You've got 911scholars.org.
Exactly.
And you click on that, and what do you get?
I'm sitting there, and it has not come up.
Nothing's come up? I mean, doesn't it take you to a Google page? It's taking you to a Google page, isn't it?
No, it simply is sitting there like I'm out of gas and not moving.
Huh.
Now, I just clicked headlines, same thing, beginner, nothing, books.
What do you mean nothing's happening on your computer?
Nothing is happening on my computer.
Okay, well, let me just mention for the sake of the audience that I've done quite a lot of research on JFK in the past and co-edit an online journal for advanced study of the death of JFK at assassinationresearch.com. I have a public issues website at assassinationscience.com.
Jim, we need to take a break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Jim Fetzer. Jim was moving to another phone. Jim, are we connected? I guess not.
Even we're connected, yeah. I'm here.
Oh, Jimmy, you're there? Okay.
Finally had to switch the headphone over.
trying to keep up with the pieces on the chessboard. Let me let you talk about what you're doing with 9/11 Truth right now.
Well, this new forum, Stephen, is the most important recent development, and I'm extremely happy about it. And I expect a lot to come from it by getting highly qualified researchers involved. Elias Davidson, the noted Icelandic scholar who now lives in Germany, is a participant in the forum now. We're dividing it into multiple threads to take advantage of, expertise in different areas. And he has done a classic piece on the absence of evidence that the government has ever produced for actual hijackers on the planes, Stephen. This is so important. I'd like to encourage everyone to go to Google and put in Elias Davidson, D-A-V-I-D-S-S-O-N, comma, no hijackers. And you get a copy of this paper, which is so absolutely fundamental and devastating to what's been going on here. Because if he's right, and I dare say he appears to be right, the government has never actually produced any evidence that there were hijackers who took over these planes. We don't have any receipts, the ticket receipts. We don't have any original manifests that have their names on them. We don't have any video footage that shows them actually coming through security. One piece of tape that has been played as though it were at Logan Airport is actually from Portland, Maine. It doesn't show events at Logan Airport, where two of the hijackings originated. The fact is that this all appears to have been a massive scam on the American people in order to justify the war on terror and to slander the Islamic people, because it does not appear there were any, zealous, fundamentalistic Muslims aboard any of these planes. Actually, we know of the 19 alleged hijackers, 15 were from Saudi Arabia. The number from Iraq was zero. So that, there were peculiarities from scratch in David Ray Griffin's book, the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. He observes right off the bat that a half a dozen or more of these alleged terrorists have turned up alive and well and living in the Middle East, which is a pretty neat trick if, in fact, you were actually killed by flying your plane into a Twin Tower or the Pentagon or crashing in Shanksville. So there's massive evidence that 9/11 is a hoax. This new site, the Scholars Forum, is devoted to investigating what actually happened at the Twin Towers, which were destroyed by some novel kind of controlled demolition, Stephen. The buildings are exploding from the top down. All the floors are remaining stationary. The floors are being turned into very fine dust. It's all happening at about the rate of free fall. This is a physical impossibility. You have to understand that below the 80th floor on the South Tower and the 96th on the North, those buildings were just cold stone steel, that the temperature of jet fuel, which is kerosene, never reaches high enough to cause the steel to weaken or even melt if it burned forever. And, in fact, it only burned for an hour, about an hour in the South Tower, an hour and a half in the North Tower. Underwriters Laboratory had certified the steel that was used in the buildings to 2,000 degrees for 3 to 4 hours without showing any adverse effects, without either weakening, much less melting. The melting point of steel was 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, the highest temperature you could ever attain with kerosene under ideal conditions, force feeding at pure oxygen, would be 1,000 degrees below that, 1,800 degrees. And in fact, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, which has been carrying the heavy water for the government here and trying to paper over all of the obvious inadequacies in the government's official account, has conceded that after studying 236 samples of steel from the towers, they found 233 had not been exposed to temperatures above 500 degrees, and the other three not above 1,400 degrees. Well, 500 degrees, Stephen, is the temperature of an ordinary office fire and ought to have been easily extinguished by the sprinkler system in the towers, except that the sprinkler system appears to have been disabled by massive explosions in the sub-basements of the two buildings that occurred shortly before the reverberations in the buildings that were attributed to the aircraft impacts. I mean, the whole business is so absurd. William Rodriguez, who was a custodian in the North Tower, for example, reported the massive explosion in the sub-basement. And while he was here in Madison during a visit not that long ago, he told me how the sub-basements were filling up with water, which led me to the realization that that had to be a principal purpose of those explosions, namely to drain water out of the system. You may or may not recall, but in some of the most dramatic footage we have from 9/11, a fire captain who hit about the 78th floor of the South Tower was reported he thought they could easily put it out with a couple of lines, and that's when the destruction sequence initiated.
Jim, we have to take another break. We'll continue this as soon as we come back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Jim Fitzer. We're talking about 9/11. That's an issue that doesn't go away, nor should we ever let it go away, until we get enough of the truths, not just known, but exposed to the great majority of people in the country, and we finally lay the blame where it needs to be laid and expose the real criminals that are behind this thing and the cover-up and everything that happened. And of course, Jim, what's so important is that that day was an open sesame for foreign wars, taking militarism to a higher level, almost limitless funding for the Pentagon and everything associated with it, Homeland Security, a police state at home, and now the looting of the federal treasury to reward criminals that created the current crisis that we're now involved in. And that day just kind of opened it all up and distracted people by scaring them. The old tactic, Jim, that always works, You create some kind of a crisis, usually fiction, and you scare the devil out of people, and they just say, well, please take, just do anything that you have to do to take care of us, protect us from those bad guys, and people don't realize that the bad guys are is the government and the people in it.
Oh, absolutely right. I think it was Hermann Göring during the Nuremberg trials who made precisely that point. He said, it's the same in all countries. Convince the people that there's a threat to the nation, and they will surrender their liberty in support of the country and its leader, where in the case of Germany, they had the personification of the state with Adolf Hitler was so powerful that any criticism of the leader was treated as unpatriotic or even as treasonous. We had an analogous transformation in the role of our leader here in the United States after 9/11. Steve, you know, most Americans don't realize that the day before 9/11, which occurred on a Tuesday, on Monday, Donald Rumsfeld announced that the Pentagon had lost track of $2.3 trillion from its budget. $2.3 trillion from its budget. That's with a T. That's not with a B. Trillion. Now, this is a huge story. You would think any sophisticated Washington politician like Rumsfeld would know better than to announce it on a Monday, because reporters are going to follow. They're going to dog it. It's going to, as they say, get legs. It's almost as though Rumsfeld knew that something traumatic was going to occur in the meanwhile, and it would obliterate this $2.3 trillion missing from the budget, from consciousness, and he'd be able to waltz back into the halls of Congress and ask for hundreds of billions more in defense spending the next day, which is exactly what happened.
Oh, indeed. I have quoted Donald Rumsfeld. Talk about a reputable source to report, to admit to a crime. 2.3 in 2001, Jim. Now we're all these years after that, and 2.3 trillion almost seems like chump change compared to what's happened since.
It's quite absurd, Stephen, isn't it? Quite absurd, the situation we're in, and this massive giveaway to the banks and financial institutions, and they don't seem to be turning it into loans for the little guy. I think it would have been a far more effective measure to take a large sum of money like that and divide that among the American taxpayers and the homeless. Do you know, Stephen, that the most effective stimulus package turns out to be food stamps, which return like $1.30 for every dollar invested in them, return $1.30 in stimulus and benefits, whereas money given to the banking industry or military investment returns 30 cents on the dollar. In other words, we're losing overwhelmingly when we put money into the military defense industry, which is part and parcel why we're in this absolutely appalling situation economically. We've been unwise in our allocation of resources, unwise because we've been manipulated by our intelligence agencies and our government, which has turned the mass media into an instrument of propaganda. I think there can be little doubt that we're gonna learn more truth, for example, about the Middle East from Al Jazeera, or about even what's going on in the United States from Pravda, than we will find in the New York Times. It's embarrassing. It's humiliating. It's a shame, Stephen. It just happens to be true.
Oh, absolutely, Jim. There's a website for Pravda. They have actually posted a few of my articles.
Oh,
imagine the New York Times posting something you wrote or I wrote. I mean, it's just impossible.
See, the Times won't even publish a letter to the editor when I occasionally send them, and, you know, they're on crucial issues, and I'm making my points as clearly and concisely as I can, but not once have they acknowledged them.
And when they do say something that's important and truthful, it'll be in a much larger article and maybe buried down somewhere in paragraph 22, and most people read the beginning of the article. Maybe they'd look for a conclusion at the end. So whatever the readership that article got, the vast majority of them never saw that hidden truth buried in the middle or far deep into an article about an important topic. So you're right. The New York Times is the lead propaganda instrument. We might not have had a war on Iraq if it hadn't been for Judith Miller essentially stenographically sending Pentagon press releases on a daily basis.
Well, it's not legal, but they are using the propaganda techniques that the CIA developed to manage and manipulate other nations here at home, and it's hardly surprising they would do so. I mean, the assassins who took out JFK appear to have been trained to take out Fidel Castro, for example, but Jack became such a problem. He hadn't invaded Cuba. He'd signed an above-ground test ban treaty with the Soviet Union. He was pulling our forces out of Vietnam. He wanted to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. He was cracking down on organized crime. He was abolishing or reforming the Fed. He'd instructed the Treasury Department to publish United States notes instead of Federal Reserve notes. He was going to cut the oil depletion allowance. These actions by JFK antagonized some of the most powerful interest groups in the country, Stephen, and they took him out Peter Dale Scott, in his book Deep Politics and the Death of JFK, describes it as a minor adjustment to doing business as usual. To put it in a nutshell, JFK was assassinated because he thought he was president of the United States.
Oh, indeed. People who think that the president is the supreme power in the country, they don't understand that whoever sits in that chair and that Oval Office, that they might as well have an electronic image as a human being. It simply makes no difference. It could be a man, it could be a woman, he could be white, he could be black, tall, short, anything else. He could be somebody who put a full sentence together, or somebody who's eloquent like Obama. That person represents the power structure of the country. Now the person is so carefully vetted in advance that probably a mistake will not be made. But if a mistake is made, they'll get rid of them. It's not hard to do.
Let me add that those major policy issues, which represented the difference between JFK and LBJ, have never been acknowledged by some of our leading public intellectuals. I'm thinking especially, for example, of Noam Chomsky, who has said, and this is astounding to me, that even if there were a conspiracy to kill JFK, so what? So what, says Chomsky, because he thinks that that didn't involve any major policy issues and therefore wasn't a significant political movement. But he's completely wrong about that. In fact, I've called him to task during a couple of interviews you can find on YouTube. Just look at Fetzer versus Chomsky, or Fetzer on Chomsky, and you'll find two interviews, one of which actually includes footage showing Chomsky making these dismissive observations. And I think that persons like him, and even Amy Goodman, who is a very good soul, have to acknowledge or come up and confront the evidence about 9/11 as well as JFK, and get to the core of the rot at the center of our government, because the Central Intelligence Agency, which appears to have played an important role, certainly in the relation to the assassination, and virtually certainly in relation to the events of 9/11, has done our country more damage than all of our enemies combined, Stephen, in its efforts to destabilize and eradicate leaders in Chile, Nicaragua, Guatemala, El Salvador, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran. I mean, it is disgusting what we have done to deprive the people of different nations their right to choose their own leaders and to govern their own nation for the benefit of their own people. We are antagonistic towards Chavez in Venezuela because he wants to use Venezuelan oil for the benefit of the Venezuelan people rather than for Exxon Mobil. We were upset with Fidel Castro because he nationalized property held by United Fruit in Anaconda and for the benefit of the Cuban people. We attacked Iraq, which had actually a very sophisticated society, very strong and vibrant, with a wonderful public health care and universal education for the students, arts and museums of the highest quality for a civilization of 4,000 years in age, a very successful functional infrastructure, and we have bombed it back into the Stone Age. For what purpose? A political agenda that sees the world as the subjugated by American military power for the benefit of American corporations and their profit margins, for the benefit of Israel by weakening the strongest, most vibrant Arab state in its vicinity, and also to punish Saddam because he was providing $25,000 bounties to the families of suicide bombers. And also, of course, for oil, getting access to oil, those natural resources, where the plan is to eventually bring that oil out via a pipeline that goes through Israel, Stephen, which means that the Israelis are going to be able to tap into it. I wouldn't be surprised that they would do that for no charge at all. I mean, all of this is going on beneath our very eyes, and we continue to see the unbelievable festering sore, the criminal conduct of the Israel in relation to the Palestinian people. Stephen, I cannot believe why this outrage, which is one, in my opinion, perhaps the transcendent moral issue of our age, is not being confronted, accepted, addressed as a serious, major human rights violation that's now lasted, what, since nearly 1950? Over 50 years we've had these problems here. And the idea that the Gaza Strip should be turned into the world's largest concentration camp, to me, is a complete and total moral outrage.
Oh, there's no question about it. And you and I discussed this on your program. It obsesses me, Jim, and it appalls me. And being Jewish myself gives me added reason to want to speak out forcefully about this. I simply can't tolerate the fact that these kinds of immense crimes go on. It really goes back to before 1948, when Israel became a state, and the very creation of the state of Israel. Israel was illegitimately created in a gigantic bloodbath that began in 1947. And it didn't end when Israel declared itself a state in mid-May 1948. I mean, it was mass murder and displacement of hundreds of thousands of civilians who in earlier years lived peacefully with the smaller Jewish population that was there. And then the imperial interests in the West, beginning with the Balfour Declaration in 1917, decided they wanted the Jewish homeland in the middle of a region of the world that basically was populated by Arabs, Muslim, not entirely, but mostly Muslim Arabs, smaller percentages who were Jews or Christians, but they weren't warriors. They didn't invade their neighbors, at least for the most part. My goodness, the way we demonize Iran today, Jim, at least as long as Iran has been Iran, when the name changed from Persia in the mid-1930s, Iran never invaded one of its neighbors. It defended itself ferociously when Iraq attacked it at our behest, armed by us, funded by us, when Saddam was an ally, just the way Hamas at one time was an Israeli ally. The irony of ironies, the Hamas that is so terribly demonized now, Hamas was an Israeli ally when Arafat was the enemy. So you bring one faction against another. Now the tables are turned over there. Hamas is the enemy, and Fatah, Arafat's party, they're the ally because a quisling by the name of Mahmoud Abbas sits there as a nominal president. His term expired on the 9th of January, but he hasn't gone anywhere. He won't hold an election.
Let me mention to your audience where they can find your interview on my program. There are two ways to get there. One is by going directly to the archives at radiofetzer.blogspot.com, radiofetzer.blogspot.com, or alternatively, go to 911scholars.org, and you will find that you can access the archives there. If you just look at the home page, there's an archives icon there. And in addition, in the upper two left and right-hand corners, you'll see in the top upper left-hand corner an item entitled Find Out 9/11. Stephen, there anyone can find about 20 major refutations of the government's official account of 9/11. Points like those I've been making, you can find them in a statement there about why doubt 9/11. And on the upper right-hand corner, there's an icon for Patriots Question 9/11. Anyone who clicks on that will discover that a website that consists of photographs, bio sketches, and statements about 9/11 from 170 senior military intelligence service law enforcement officials, over 660 engineers and architects, 170 pilots and aviation professionals, 350 professors, 230 survivors, over 200 artists, entertainers, and media professionals who have challenged the official account of 9/11. Anyone who thinks that opposition to the official account of 9/11 is for, you know, wingnuts or kooks, simply does not know what they are talking about. And recent surveys have shown as much as 40% of the American people are skeptical about what they have been told by the government about 9/11. And I'm convinced, Stephen, that number is growing. And if you visit the PatriotsQuestion911.com website, you'll be able to appreciate for yourself the breadth and depth and quality of those who are challenging what the government has told us about 9/11 and which it has used to curtail our civil rights, to initiate these wars in violation of international law, the UN Charter, and even the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, absolutely, Jim. We have to take another break. Then we have a short segment, Let the Hour Flies.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Short segment with my guest, Jim Fetzer. Jim, hopefully more and more people will begin to realize that what's going on, and it's been going on for a long time, it's just gotten into higher gear in more recent years, and it hasn't missed a beat under Obama in a little over 2 months in office. And this guy has already sold out all of us for the special interest, the big moneyed interest, the militaristic interest that he represents. And what's going on, of course, that we understand so well, is that we're losing our liberties, we're losing our wealth. Young people, I don't know what young people have to look forward to today, Jim. The things that you and I grew up with, I mean, they're disappearing for more and more people. I don't know what kind of a future they have. I don't see much of a future for them. If we don't do something to defend ourselves, heaven help us ahead.
Even I share those concerns. It's breaking my heart to see Obama increasing our forces in Afghanistan, talking about attacking Pakistan. I mean, this is simply outrageous. He seems to be making an effort to get the economy back on a sound footing. He's done a lot of good things in terms of appointments. It curtailed the, you know, leases of public lands for mining operations in Utah and Wyoming, adjacent to some of our most precious natural heritage. If he turns out to be a colossal disappointment, as you're suggesting, it's going to be one of the most painful, disillusioning experiences of my entire life. I have had such great confidence in this man. I so admire his wife. I think that they are splendid human beings, but if I am convinced by the actions taken by his administration that he's not the man he appears to be, that his background as a professor of constitutional law, for example, isn't going to lead to dismantling of the Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act and putting this depoliticizing the Justice Department and putting us back on a firm constitutional footing, it's going to be one of the most excruciating mental and emotional experiences of my life, Stephen. So I desperately hope that he really is going to fulfill the aspirations he represented as a candidate for president of the United States.
Oh, I hope you're right and I'm wrong, but I have to say I followed him all through the campaign. I quoted him from his voting record, from his public statements, and it doesn't surprise me a bit to see what's gone on in the past 2 months. And just the economic side alone, that of course is in the news all the time because of this terrible crisis we're going through, the looting of trillions of dollars being handed over to these Wall Street bandits. And he's the guy in the Oval Office, and he's sitting there allowing this to happen. And he's got an economic team that's the same team from the 1990s that were there planning and beginning this process from back then. From getting rid of regulatory laws that could have stopped a lot of this outrageous stuff that's gone on. These are the people who are running things now, and the people who were in place, like Geithner, the Treasury Secretary. He conspired with the last administration to begin the thievery that went on then. And he's just continuing it now with a lot more money than was handed over during the Bush years. And I look at this and I write about it, and it absolutely appalls me. Oh, my goodness. We're out of time. Jim, I hope you'll come back and we can do this again.
Even that would be my great pleasure, and I promise to be on time.
Oh, oh, that's fine. I didn't miss a beat, and we just jumped right into it when you came on, Jim. But we have to continue this, 9/11 and all the rest.
It's a privilege to be on with you, Stephen. I want to thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, Jim, it's a great honor for me to be on with you. This is so important to me and you as well, and the other wonderful people I have on the program. We will come back another time and do it again, Jim, and we'll be back again tomorrow with another program on the economy. Join us then.